I'm joined today by the Neve Trio. All three members are here with me. Why don't you go around and just introduce yourselves to our listeners?
My name is Misha Veselov. I'm the cellist in the Neve Trio.
I'm Ari Nakamura, the pianist.
I'm Anna Williams, violinist.
Yeah. You know, I have to say that every time one of your new albums come out, I'm very excited because it always guarantees there's going to be something interesting to listen to and talk about. And this album certainly does not disappoint.
Aw. Thanks.
The name of the album on the Shandos record label is Her Voice. It's mm-hmm. music by three female composers. You know, female composers, that's a big subject. Mm-hmm. And how did you narrow it down to these three particular composers? I guess we should say who they are. Amy Beach, Rebecca Clark, and Louise Farranc.
Well, I would say it was actually pretty hard to narrow it down. But we love all these pieces. They all have such distinct voices. And we really wanted to give listener sort of a three different worlds as they are. And, you know, Clark has such a dramatic contrast and such atmospheric sound, and Beach is full of songful melodies and sort of buoyant kind of textures. And Farranc is just this beautiful, elegant French late classical romantic piece. So they're all very distinct and very specific voices, I would say.
They're all very different from each other, as you say, and the way that you have them arranged on this album, they kind of progress a little bit. Hmm. The Farranc is, you know, sort of rooted in that classical mode a little bit, especially the way it begins. And then Amy Beach, I think our listeners are probably more familiar with her. Hmm. And then Rebecca Clark may be the least known composer on here from a listener standpoint, but some of the most interesting music, I think, yep. in that piano trio.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What is the conversation like when you're all sitting down and deciding to record a new album? I mean, do people kind of shout out ideas, or does somebody else come to you? Or how does that happen? And how did it happen in this case specifically?
Well, I mean, I would say everything we do is a collaborative process. And so, yeah, of course, it's sort of it's an embarrassment of riches, as I'm sure is obvious, you know, when you're at a piano trio and the huge expanse of repertoire is just, you're just spoiled rotten, you know? And so with that being the backdrop, it's always really exciting when you get to do something that perhaps is a little bit less known. Unfortunately, women voices historically have not been as presented as, let's say, or supported as men's voices. And so that was really of interest because, as we believe, you know, good music is good music as is good music. And hopefully one day we'll just refer to all these composers that happen to be women as composers as yeah. opposed to women yeah. composers. But yeah, I think that it, you know, the Clark has so much drama and excitement, and the Beach has so many amazing textures and sort of songful tunes. And then the Farranc, I think for all of us, that was actually the one that was the most unknown. I mean, I think we had to order the music that it took like several months to even track it down. So it was like this detective work a little bit. So I think anytime we can, as an ensemble, be part of not only advocating for women's voices, but also for voices that are a little, lesser known. It's exciting, and we feel like it's really a huge part of what we want to do. You know, of course, alongside the titans that we might all think of. So, yeah, it was a collaborative process. I think we all got excited about all the pieces individually, and that as a whole, it would be something that could perhaps introduce new listeners to some of these distinct voices.
Yeah. You talk about the Louise Farranc piece, mm-hmm. saying you had to track down the music. Is that a piece that you already knew from some source, or
no.
did you discover it?
Discovery.
We yeah. discovered it.
Yeah. she actually has two piano trios, and she has other, like, flute trio, and she was quite a fruitful composer. And the second trio, the Opus 43, I believe it is pretty well known. I think it's been recorded, and you can buy music online
yeah.
and things like that. But this trio, which was earlier one, Opus 33, was really hard to find, and we actually really loved that one especially.
Yeah, I can tell you if you Google it, you get the flute trio instead of the piano trio.
Right.
That pops up.
Right.
Well, that's interesting. It's a lovely piece. I wonder if we can talk a little bit about Amy Beach, because
sure.
that's a composer that is sort of the, you know, sort of the go-to among pioneers of female composers, having written the first symphony that was performed by a major symphony. It was a Boston symphony, right?
That's right.
She was a New Englander, that's for sure.
Yeah, so you should feel right at home out there in the Boston area.
That's right.
With music of Amy Beach. This piano trio is, well, she was in her 70s when she wrote this.
Mm.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about her as a composer? Because I know, you know, the story, she got married and then she was told not to perform as a pianist anymore, to teach anymore. She was still allowed to compose, but I mean, she was operating under these very strict kind of 19th century, 20th century morals.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
I think she married a doctor and she was using his name too, I think.
So her name actually is Cheney, her maiden name. And but in the music, it says, Mrs. H.H.H. Beach. So it's not, she doesn't even go by her actual name, Amy, in the music, which is kind of...
Yeah, Amy isn't on there. It's just Mrs.
Mrs. H.H.H., yeah. But she was very proper in a lot of ways for the times, I guess. But in a way, because she couldn't perform, she kind of put her creative juices into composing. And we have to, I guess, be happy about that side, because obviously her music is absolutely beautiful. And in this specific trio, she recycled quite a lot of her songs. And, you know, it's really full of melodies and colors, and you can really sing a lot of those tunes. So, yeah, it's a very, very beautiful trio.
Let's talk about you guys a little bit. I know we've talked about this in the past, but I think the last couple of interviews we had, we didn't touch on it too much. The Neave Trio, that's spelled N-E-A-V-E. Can you tell us sort of how you came together as a group and where the name comes from?
Sure. So Misha and I, we met in grad school. Actually, serendipitously, we met at the Longy School of Music of Bard College right here in Cambridge, where now we are on faculty and in residence. So it's like a full circle. Life is a mystery kind of cool moment. And we really had this dream of forming a trio, and we met thankfully, we met Ari a little bit later on, and just felt that sort of kindred spirit in our playing. When we first started playing together, Misha and I, we had this really profound experience that helped us find our name. And since we're on the topic of sort of voice, you know, it sort of really influenced from an early stage our kind of voice and values as an ensemble. The experience was that we played a lot in a specific community, actually in New Jersey, and got to know this community and its audience members quite well. There was one particular guy who was just a gem. His name was Bruce. He loved music. He would come to our concerts and wanted to talk about the music and how it meant so much to him. And he was just amazing, and he became this dear friend. He unfortunately suffered an accident which left him paralyzed. And so at that point, he couldn't come to our concerts anymore, of course. Mm. So as a result, we, you know, sort of the least we could do was start going to him and performing for him. And those experiences were really impactful, really special, because we always felt, perhaps he didn't even know that we felt this way, but we always felt that it was a real exchange, and that we kind of got more out of the experience than he could have even known, because we would go and play for him. And then as a result, he would talk with us and share really meaningful stories about his life, including about his family and his life before the accident. So we would hear lots of stories, including those about his daughter, of whom he was so proud. He was a proud dad. And her name was Neave. So we chose the name more as a sort of as a constant reminder of how the work that we do, how it can really serve to connect us to one another on a profound level. So that's why.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a beautiful story, and it resonates, I think, through all of the music that I've heard from the trio that you guys have recorded.
That means a lot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And speaking of which, I always am struck by the recording quality of your albums. Do you record at the Longy School or do you record somewhere else?
We record somewhere else, yeah.
It's always a secret location.
No, right? Secret. For our Shando's albums, which we're just... We always pinch ourselves that we get to record for this fantastic label. For those albums, we get to record in an idyllic English countryside. I guess it used to be a chapel, but no, it was not a chapel.
I think it's like a barn.
Mm-hmm. But. Oh, I'm sorry. It feels like a chapel. Well, okay.
Just to be clear, you said a barn,
not a chapel. All right. Surrounded. It's a chapel of music. Okay. Anyway, but it's a barn. Sorry. But it's refurbished and lovely regardless. And super, super peaceful. We have pheasants. We have birds coming up to the window. And just it's just wonderful. And it's always 3 days of really intense music making, interrupted by tea and biscuits and just getting to spend time with our producer that we just adore. So
yeah,
it's pretty, it's the best work ever.
Tell me a little bit about your early entry into music. I know you all started your respective instruments fairly young. And Misha, you started on the piano instead of the cello, is that right?
That's true. Yeah, I don't know how you know that. That's true. Yeah.
And you know, I do my research.
Yeah. I switched to cello when I was 10, and I was lucky to have a wonderful teacher back in St. Petersburg, where I'm from. And I studied with her. I just walked into local school and with my mom, obviously. And, she was there that day, and I studied with her for 8 years. So she was a big part of me falling in love with the cello, for sure.
Yeah. But, Ari, you were always a pianist. Is that true?
Yes, since I was 4 in Japan.
What got you interested in piano?
Well, my brothers took piano lessons, so there was upright piano already sitting in my house. So I just started to play by ear, and then my mother thought it was a great idea for me to take lessons as well. And then I stuck with it for more than 30 years.
Yeah, this seems to be a common theme among pianists, because when I've talked to pianists before and I've asked them how they got interested in the instrument, they say they had a sibling who was doing it or who was playing it. It's an interesting angle. Anna, you were a violinist since, how old were you when you started?
I was 6 and a half.
Six and a half, not seven,
not six. Six and a half.
As we know to 6-year-olds, it's very important
at that age,
Yeah. What was your entry to the violin? How did you get interested in that instrument?
Okay, so the shortish version is that I had a speech impediment. Probably my colleagues wish I still had the speech impediment so I would talk a little less. But I had a speech impediment, and I was taken to a special ed teacher who was not super helpful. My mom is a great mom and was protective and was like, maybe we don't need to do this. And at the time, I'd been asking to take violin lessons. So much like Misha, we literally walked over to the local music school in Belmont, Massachusetts, where I'm from. And my mom said, I don't know a thing about violin. I just want someone who's nice. And I was given a violin teacher. And Doobie, if you're listening, I love you still. And I studied with her for 7 years. And perhaps to the chagrin of those around me, my speech cleared up.
Wow. That's amazing. And the kind of therapy it was for you.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure. The brain is weird.
I think it's interesting that, you know, the three of you come from different backgrounds, different cultures. So you have this really international thing going on. You know, Anna, you're American. Misha from Russia. Ari from Japan. Does that impact at all on your styles or coming together as a trio?
Oh, that's a good question. Really. I don't think so. I mean, I think it's not to be cliche, but music is really is an international language, and I think that we have such a common, I think, language in that medium for trio. So I don't really know if we necessarily.
Yeah,
I think I'd say I had so many Russian teachers, so
and I studied here in the States as well for grad school, so we all kind of, I don't know, it's a very funny thing, but it doesn't really, I don't think it really makes a difference.
Well, I mean, you've obviously forged your own style and approach together, right?
Yeah, I think so.
We try. That's what we try for.
Let's talk a little bit more about Rebecca Clark, because that's a composer who has a wonderful, not a large, but a wonderful body of music. Mm-hmm. And this piece was a complete discovery for me. Actually, I think I've heard the third movement before, but the piano trio as a whole, I hadn't really spent a lot of time with. And it's very interesting and very unpredictable, I would say, in listening to it for the first time. Mm. What can you tell us about this composer, Rebecca Clark?
Well, she was quite an incredible woman. She was the first, one of the first, at least, female professional orchestra players. She played viola, that's her instrument, and she had to earn money by playing viola because her father kicked her out of the house in a pretty unfortunate circumstance. She discovered that he was having an affair and confronted him, apparently. So she, at a pretty young age, had to leave house and earn money, which at the time was a pretty scandalous thing to do. And then she was a violist, as I mentioned, and she started composing. And she submitted quite a few pieces. There's a competition in Berkshire's in Massachusetts called Coolidge Competition. And she submitted her pieces. There are a few versions of that story, but as far as we know, she submitted it anonymously. And two of those pieces ended up initially tying for the first place. And in fact, her first piece, Viola Sonata, which is one of the most known pieces, was tied for the first place with a piece by Ernst Bloch. And only the woman who sponsored the competition ended up breaking the tie, but they didn't know it was by a woman composer. And when they found out it was by Rebecca Clark, that's kind of how she got her start as a composer in terms of being acknowledged. And she, after that, there were all kinds of accusations that it was another piece by Ernst Bloch that he used Rebecca Clark as like a pseudonym and all kinds of stuff, because nobody could believe that woman write such a piece, which is absolutely unbelievable. And then she had quite a few moments in her life were pretty significant. She ended up getting stuck in the U.S. because she couldn't come back to England, where she's from originally, because of the war. And she ended up getting a job as a nanny, which I think she worked for something like 20 years as a nanny. Mm. And partially why she didn't compose as much as she could, because she had to do that job, you know, as to earn money and make a living here in the States. But yeah, her music is its own world. It's really, really distinct voice for sure.
Yeah. Misha, I have to say, you know your stuff.
Oh, yes.
You told me more about Rebecca Clark than I had ever known.
That's great. I'm glad then.
It's fascinating. Right. Well, she passed in 1979, so she's the most recently, you know, lived composer that you have on this disc. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's a Rebecca Clark Society. That's a thing.
Yep.
Did you have to go through any interaction with her, with that society, or any of the, you know, her estate or anything like that for this?
Not really.
I haven't yet. Maybe that's to come. I mean, that would be...
I think that's part of, you know, having a label. I think they probably dealt with all kinds of, like, rights and states and things like that. But in general, I mean, it's a published piece, and it's out there. And, you know, it's, anybody can play it, and I hope people do. It's a really, really great piece.
Right. I was in mind of the Kurt Weill Foundation that seems to follow every, you know, performance and production of his work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Did you play, I know the Pharenc, obviously, you weren't playing before you decided to do this album, but were you playing in these other two trios by Amy Beach or Rebecca Clark?
We did learn them specifically for the album, but as always this process goes, you perform as much as you can before you have to record. So we were performing for about a year and a half, at least, if not longer, before we recorded it. So we really got, you know, familiar and comfortable with those pieces. It's a big part of
So you're all three working basically in the same place at the Longy School. Yeah. I mean, do you get a lot of time together to practice as a group?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. We rehearse so much.
Every day.
Together.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you're still together. That's good.
Yeah, still together.
Yeah. And we're so lucky to have Longy as our home. You know, when we're not on tour, we always, you know, it's always such a wonderful home base and such a great community to be a part of.
Yeah. How much touring do you do throughout the year?
A lot.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always exciting when you look at the week ahead and you're like, oh, well, we sleep at home for a couple of days. Well, I should say we're very excited to get to tour as much as we do. It's very, very, we feel very fortunate.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for you to come out here to the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, we want to do that.
Yeah, one of these days.
All right, we're gonna work on it.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful album. Like I say, I've enjoyed and loved all of your albums.
Thank you so much.
This one in particular with these three composers here, these three female composers that you have.
Yes.
Louise Farrakh, Amy Beach, Rebecca Clark. It's called Her Voice from Shandos Records. Just go through and give us info on your social media accounts or where we can learn more if we want to.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're on Instagram and Facebook. So facebook.com.
Neve Trio.
If you look for Neve Trio, N-E-A-V-E, on Instagram and Facebook, we are there. Also on Twitter. And of course, our website, nevetrio.com. You can find our schedule. I will say that if you write us on social media, especially, it is us responding. So we are.
Oh, good to know.
We will respond. Yeah.
Well, I Googled the Neve Trio, and I found this music video with you, Anna, in it, with the Rebecca Clark.
Oh, second boy.
Movie. Yeah. Which was an interesting, very atmospheric video. Kind of fun, actually, and the way that it ties into the music. Can you take a moment and just tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. No, it was fun. I am not someone who, that's not what I usually do. It was a fun project. We were working with a local filmmaker, and you know, truly, we always are interested in how can we make the music that we love that speaks to us so poignantly. How can we bring it to a wider audience? Maybe provide a window into whatever the piece is with. How can we provide a window for someone who might not, you know, search for just the music itself, who might be more inclined to watch something? So, you know, whether it's working with filmmakers or dancers or we've actually done collaborations with School of Architecture here in Boston at the MIT School of Architecture. Working with composers, filmmakers, dancers, you name it, we're always really wanting to provide another way to see and hear the music so that it can hopefully reach a wider audience. So it's, you know, it's always a fun experiment, and it also helps us to hear and sort of think of the music in a different way when we're collaborating with these other mediums.
Yeah, and it totally shows Rebecca Clark is a great film score composer.
That's
well.
True. There you go.
Well, I appreciate your time today and talking about these wonderful composers, this great new recording. Anna Williams, Misha Veselov, and Ari Nakamura, thanks so much. I look forward to our next conversation, hopefully sometime in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.